Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host,
Kayla.
Do you know this is our first Marvel movie we've ever reviewed on the podcast?
Is it really?
Yeah, because the last one was over 2 years ago now, Far From Home, and we didn't review that. And the one before that was Endgame, and that was before we started.
Wow, that is incredible. And this year we reviewed WandaVision,
mm-hmm.
and this, and then we'll review Loki, spoiler, spoiler, and yep. then we'll review Shang-Chi, and then we'll
and
review
Spider-Man.
The Eternals, and then
and
we'll
Eternals,
review
wow, there's
Spider-Man.
A lot of Marvel stuff this year. I forgot about
And we
all
didn't
that.
Review Falcon and Winter Soldier, so that's
no.
the only one we didn't do, so that's
I think we made
crazy.
A good call on that one, though.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I would have had to say.
There's a lot going on in that one. that I feel show. Like we can shelf that, so.
But before we jump into it, how have you been in the past, I guess, weeks?
Yeah, you know, I went on vacation. I wow. spent some time at the beach, and by time I mean I spent an afternoon at the beach with a friend of mine. Yeah, short vacation, which was nice. I didn't get sunburnt, which was also nice. I have made sure to apply lots of sunscreen this summer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So far, because it's been brutally hot out. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's it for me. How is summer going for you so far?
Good. I've been to someplace hot, and then I went someplace colder, and now I'm back home in the middling between hot and cold, you know? Kind
yeah.
of trying to find that middle ground. No, it's
right.
been good. I've been reading not a lot, but a lot for me, I guess, because I never read.
You've been reading a lot of, like, movie-related books, right?
Yeah, yeah. I tend to, well, I think I said this in the Luca review, but I try to read ones that, like, are not too complex, but still are complex enough. And then also, further with, like, I've been reading a lot of book adaptions, or vice versa, so they were adapted into movies. The just kind of, it gives me another kind of thing to lean on. So especially if I'm at the beach or something, or I'm kind of in a distracting environment, I don't have to focus too hard because I kind of have a good picture in my head already.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been nice because, you know, reading has become, as you get older, reading becomes such a chore. So sometimes you just gotta chill out with it.
Yeah. The secret to that I have found is you have to let yourself read something that is interesting.
Mm-hmm,
I've found, because
exactly.
I read a lot when I was a kid, not that we're a reading podcast, but
imagine, I'd be so bad.
When I got older and I was reading books, I felt like I always had to read certain books because there's like more pressure as an adult to read different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I found personally that I still prefer to read like middle grade, young adult, or like children's literature.
Mm-hmm.
I do like adult literature as well, or classic literature and stuff, but I've most of
the
stuff
always
I
so
read
much
is
work
is
though
children's,
like,
and I just find that more enjoyable because it's like you can get good stories out of it, and that's
yeah.
I've been reading a lot too, but that's mostly what I've been reading is like
right
children's series.
Fun I think we will be having a semi-book related podcast coming up, kind of.
It's gonna be exciting.
So we'll talk a little bit about books in that episode, but this is based on a book, kind of, this movie, the Marvel comic books. I've never read a comic book, really.
I've read graphic novels, but not like comics.
I have to.
Like this.
But yeah, I've never read a Marvel comic book. I did read, they had comic books in like shoe boxes, like kids' shoes used to come with comic books sometimes.
Huh.
Like,
I remember. That's not something I'm familiar with.
Skechers had like this line of shoes where they had like every brand of shoe for kids had a different comic book character they made up associated with it. And so there was like the Skechers cinematic universe. That's not what they called it, but that's what it could have been called.
Wow.
I think I still have some. Anyway, this is Black Widow. Again, this is the first movie, Marvel movie, since July 2nd of 2019, which is very weird to think about. The theater I saw that movie in, Far From Home, is now closed. So just lots of different things that have happened in the world since the last Marvel movie. It's interesting, like, obviously this wasn't planned by them, but it was the exact cutoff of the whole Infinity Saga Phase 3 thing, because this is the first Marvel movie in Phase 4. And so it kind of worked out for them that it wasn't like the pandemic didn't happen in between Infinity War and Endgame or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, without spoiling anything, I don't understand why this movie didn't come out sooner. And I just kept thinking that the whole time. As I was like, why didn't this movie come out when it was set? Because I think it would have, like, given a little more context to some things. Mm-hmm. Maybe garner a little more sympathy for Black Widow before she, spoiler, dies in Endgame.
Endgame, yeah.
Because, like, Black Widow has always been kind of more impersonal to me. Mm-hmm. And so watching this, I was like, I feel like it gives a lot more of, like, oh, she has a family too, because I feel like people's thing was always, when you hear the conversation about Clint and Natasha and who should have died, everyone's always like, Clint has a family, so Natasha had to be the one to die. And it's like, well, it's the
worst excuse,
not a
ever.
Great argument, but no. With this, it's like, that's not valid, because this whole movie is about family. So
Clint should have died because he's annoying.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that kind of gives some context, though, going into this. Like, I think I'm very neutral on Black Widow. I know that you are more negative. Like, she's always just kind of been there. Like, it was never something like with Hawkeye, with him. I'm just like, that's a major no for me. Hawkeye gives off majorly bad vibes. Black Widow, yeah, she was there. But
yeah, I'm not necessarily negative, but I'm also like, I don't care that she died, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
she's a very middle ground for me.
Yeah.
I like a lot of other people better than her. Like, she would never be in, like, my top 10 Marvel characters, or even, like, top 15 Marvel characters.
Wow, yeah, I mean, there's so many now, so that's true. Interesting. Yeah, she was, like, probably in my, if I had to rank, like, the original Avengers, she would be, like, right in the middle. So, yeah, I wasn't not excited for this, but I wasn't really that excited for it either. Like, it got delayed 3 times, and I never really cared, just because I was like, okay, I'll see it whenever it comes out. Like, if Spider-Man had gotten delayed 3 times, I would have been very sad. But with
I think it's also, like, to the same thing, I've moved on from that phase. Like, I know that this came out, like, technically in Phase 4.
Yeah.
But it's not a Phase 4 movie. So I have, like, moved on in my mind in the Marvel Universe.
Right,
like,
to, like, the next stories coming.
I have, you know, taken my time from Endgame and been like, all right, this happened. I am finding my resolve with it. Mm. And now we are seeing new heroes come into place and all this. And so it was just kind of weird to be like, oh, yeah. And, like, we have a new Captain America now. So they're referencing Captain America. And I'm like, this is referencing Steve. But, like, I'm already on, you know, Sam Wilson as the new Captain America.
Very exciting.
And so it's just, like, exciting. I definitely think obviously COVID contributed to that. Because this would have come out before. But, yeah, I just feel like that kind of hurt my original perception of the film going in, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. In some ways, I think maybe it was the best one to go back with, because it's a character we know, and the next two movies are characters we don't know yet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it could definitely have been helpful. I also think, I mean, this is maybe giving Disney, like, too much credit, but in my mind, I would like to think that maybe, because we've had conversations about, like, why didn't they release this sooner on Disney Plus for $30? Because it would have done great for them, and it's not really a big release. I mean, it is, but it's not one of their bigger ones. But I would like to think that this, since this is like, this is only the second, both like women lead and also women director in a Marvel movie. Like, they didn't want to give that just a Disney Plus release and make it a small deal. So that's what I would like to think was the case. But in any
really,
case,
it's probably about money.
But it's interesting because they were so adamant that this was only going to release in theaters. And it wasn't until the final delay in March, when it got delayed to July, that they were like, okay, we'll do this in theaters and then both on Disney Plus at the same time.
Mm.
Which is interesting because they did that with Cruella. But I think a lot of people are saying this is like the big test to see if they'll keep doing this in other studios too. Like, can you still make money if you release your movie in theaters and on demand at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
They're doing this with Jungle Cruise as well. And I mean, we're recording this on Saturday, so we don't know the full box office, but it's projected to beat the current post-pandemic record, which is $70 million for Fast and Furious
wow.
9. And it's going to, estimated is $87.8 million. So
wow.
Far, so good for them, which means maybe we'll see this more.
I will say one downside that I've seen, which is no surprise to me, and has been talked about a little bit on Twitter, I've seen, is that because of it being released on streaming, a lot of clips of it, high quality clips, have been released online from people reposting stuff, you know, illegally, but whatever. Whereas if it was in the theaters, that wouldn't really happen. Because I remember, like, when Endgame came out, I saw a few spoilers on Twitter before I saw the movie, but it was like really, really low quality clips from people recording in the theater, stuff like that. Whereas this is like the literal clip from the movie is being posted and passed around, which is really interesting, in regards to the like streaming simultaneous release.
Yeah. Cause like, I mean, on demand is nothing new. I mean, last year we had it a lot, but this is the first time it's been like such a big movie like this, where that does happen, where people screen grab and share. I wonder if like in the future they keep doing this, if they'll add maybe like an invisible watermark kind of thing that they can scan for, because that's what they do with like, that's what they're doing with the online screenings that were happening. Or maybe they'll even try like an online screening type of format, but who knows? It will be definitely interesting to see, and I think will really impact, if they keep doing this, the like rewatchability, because I was reading an article that was saying they would expect, since there's Marvel fans that are so like dedicated, like most Marvel fans that are that dedicated will go to the theater for the first time, but then after that we'll probably get it on Disney Plus and rewatch it and look for the Easter eggs, and all that will happen a lot faster than
yeah,
it did before.
I mean, I wouldn't go rewatch this one unless like I had friends that were like, oh, let's go see Black Widow.
Right.
Think with another one, if I really liked it, I would rewatch it because I have A-list. If I didn't have like a subscription, I don't know that I would rewatch movies in the theater in general.
Yeah, definitely. I think that also is something that will impact rewatches with, if people keep doing movie I don't know how many people actually do movie theater subscription services.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Who knows? Let's do a quick synopsis. Right, there's not too many good ones out there right now. This was just from Google. You know, it's what we got. It's not really like people are surprised what's going to happen in this one. So do you want to just read this one off really quick and we can get into our non-spoiler thoughts?
I would love to.
Wow.
Natasha Romanoff, aka Black Widow, confronts the darker parts of her ledger when a dangerous conspiracy with ties to her past arises. Pursued by a force that will stop at nothing to bring her down, Natasha must deal with her history as a spy and the broken relationships left in her wake long before she became an Avenger.
Gotta say, not giving anything away, but for me, I didn't feel like there was like the momentum of a force that will stop at nothing to bring her down. Like, I didn't really feel that. It was more like she was trying to pursue something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I would agree. The plot is generally just very weak.
Like, it was more driven by her, which can be good. It was more driven by her, like, actions than that makes it sound like it was driven by the actions of the villain, like, pursuing them. Like, it was like a get chased kind of movie. I don't know. But so, seeing as this was the first Marvel release in 2 years after a pandemic, how was your theater experience with this one?
This is the first movie that I have seen in the Big D Theater. Sorry, most unfortunately named theater.
A great name.
I will never understand AMC's decision on that one.
You saw this on a Friday, right? You saw this on Friday?
Yes. I saw this on Friday at 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Wow, me too at 5 p.m.
Wow, Thursday, but you saw it on Thursday.
But still 5.
This is a very large theater. It's not like a normal size. That's why it's called Big D.
Big D theater.
Short. It's basically like better than a regular theater, but not as good as IMAX. Is pretty much their philosophy behind this, I guess.
So it's not the biggest. It's just
but it's considerably large. Mm-hmm. Like it can seat a lot of people. I don't know how many. Sorry. I'm sorry. I need to stop describing it as large. I'm sorry.
Anyway, was there a lot of people there in the theater, I'm assuming?
It was more full than I've seen a theater since going back. Except, I actually think when I saw A Quiet Place Part 2, I think there were more people in that theater. It was a little bit smaller. It was at the Alamo. So there was a decent amount of people. Everyone was kind of spread out, in their own little section, like a couple people in a row kind of grouped off. But there was like laughs in the theater everyone kind of stayed, you know, after the credits, which I thought was kind of cute.
It's always fun.
One of those moments.
Well, it's always fun to see like the three people that leave and everyone just looks at them like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah. And then you can see people like opening up their phones and
you're
trying to snoop on what they're looking at on their phone. I don't know if you do that. I do that.
Sometimes it depends if someone's put next to
you. Yeah, it was a fine theater experience. You know, I feel like it was the norm. I think if COVID wasn't going on, there may have been more people. I'm guessing that more people went to the 7 o'clock showing, but there was also screenings in like smaller theaters in the theater as well. So it's hard to say how many people were actually like seeing this movie at my theater, but
Yeah. I had a very interesting experience. Not like because anything crazy happened, but so I was dumb and completely forgot how, like, I guess I just thought that maybe since it was a pandemic, there wouldn't be like a lot of people buying tickets. So when I went to buy tickets on like Monday, so like 4 days, 3 days, because I went on Thursday before the screening or the showing, there were pretty much all sold out. And especially because my mom wanted to go, so we had to look for two seats that were next to each other. So the only one that had good seats with two seats next to each other was the 5 o'clock, the 5 p.m. screening in 3D. And I haven't seen a 3D movie in like 5 years. I think the last one was actually Thor Ragnarok, which was another Marvel movie.
Wow.
So that's interesting. But that was also IMAX 3D. This was just regular. So it was the 5 p.m. one, which was the first screening. There were two simultaneous screenings, one in 3D, one in 2D, of Black Widow on Thursday. And it was pretty full. Ironically, so my mom sat on my left, and there was pretty much every seat was taken, but there was three seats on my right that were just empty. So for me, it was actually great because I really had like, I hate when there's like, especially with the reclining seats where like people are just laying next to you and I don't know. Yeah, not my vibe. But it was for, especially considering it's 3D and I don't think many people like, I feel like that's not their first choice anymore. So that made me assume like there's a ton of people in the other one as well at the 5 p.m. one. And then when we got out of the screening, like the central lobby was just packed because it was both screenings getting out at like the same time.
Wow, our theater was not like that at all. It's like a ghost town.
No, it was wild. There was like people like, because you're in line at the bathroom, and then there's people like just talking about theories that you don't know, and you're like, I guess they're just talking to themselves right now, because he was just kind of like talking out loud. He was like, so I guess that post credit. I was like, okay.
We have like signs all over our theater that's like, don't spoil the movie for other people.
Yeah,
don't talk about the movie in the hallways.
They don't care. It was not like there. First, no, this is definitely the most people I've seen in a theater since then, but it was not like a lot of like liveliness in the theater. There was some laughs for sure, and like some general chuckling, but definitely not as much as I've seen in other Marvel movies. And I don't know if that was maybe because it's like a little newer at this point for being back in the theater. One thing that was funny, because I still wear a mask, because one, there was so many people in this theater, and that was just like a lot of people. And two, there's still the Delta variant out there, and I want to be safe, and I want to make sure I'm keeping others safe. So I had a mask on, but you also have 3D glasses on. And so the first 30 minutes of the screening was, and they're like really cheap, like all the way down to your nose. So the first 30 minutes of the screening was like figuring out a way to configure it, so I could still see the screen, like, and it wasn't angled, so the 3D was off, but also so every time I took a breath, my glasses fogged up. So
now you know how it feels.
Truly, I figured out a system that
glasses
worked really
well.
Glasses
and a mask through the whole pandemic. That is,
yeah.
I found that certain masks are better with glasses than other masks.
Mm-hmm. And I found, like, because I wear sunglasses, like, everywhere I go, and certain pairs I have are worse than others, and these were the kind that like covered your entire nose bridge, and so these were just not ideal. But I figured out a system about 30 minutes in where like I had them positioned. I had to like balance them, but it worked.
Yeah,
I was
the only person wearing a mask in our theater.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, I can't see everyone obviously, but as far as where I could see it, I was as well. So I don't think anyone else had that issue, but it was something personal to me, you know. But it was a fun theater experience. It was fun being in a room with that many people again, like,
yeah,
just kind of having that communal experience. I'm sure in a movie that I care more about, not that I didn't care about this, but in a movie that I'm more excited for, it would be even more exciting, just because, like, yeah, I'm so excited to see this. Woohoo. Mm-hmm. So I would say the theater experience definitely didn't just detract from the viewing, but it wasn't like something like Endgame or a Star Wars movie where I don't think it would be the same if I didn't see it with a lot of people. So I don't know how much we can say without spoiling, because this is very new. So I want to make sure we can keep this section pretty spoiler free for the listeners. So, you know, they can get some of our thoughts, but they can go in without having the movie spoiled. So I think we could talk like generally about some of the areas of the movie. That's what I was kind of thinking, but was there like anything in particular you were thinking we could touch on that won't spoil anything?
One thing that I was thinking when I was watching the movie that I feel like is a non-spoiler, because we know that it's a Marvel movie, so there's going to be fight sequences in it.
True.
Naturally, I hated the way the fight sequences were shot.
Interesting.
I thought it was all just, like, so fast-paced, and the cutting was, like, so quick. Mm. And a lot of the fight sequences used, like, a lot of medium and close-up shots.
Mm.
And it was very hard for me. Yes, the film did in general, which is another one of my complaints. But specifically in the fight sequences and the, like, big action set pieces, which is very normal for Marvel movies, I felt like I was missing a lot of the action, and I was struggling to follow the kind of fight or something, or it was just too chaotic to even really appreciate the choreography and kind of what was happening, because it just was shot in a way that I felt like was hard or more difficult for me to follow.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think so that I can bring it more to the directing of the movie, where this is some issue. This is an issue I find with a lot of more recent Marvel movies, where it seems the strategy is to find a director that has made some very like well-received indie movies and like give them a Marvel movie. That seems so. This is an Australian director. She's made some indie films, well-received. And so then you have her, you did it with Chloe Zhao. I would say Taika would be like half of that because he's made some larger stuff. But relatively, like, I feel like that's been a lot of their goal is to try to get these new directors in here with a different vision. And I think that works great in the intimate moments or like the emotional moments. Yeah. So I think this has some great emotional moments.
And I think her directing was really good in character performances as well.
Yeah, same. So, and I think so it works, I think, in that aspect, because that's where their films focused on before. But I think with the action, it definitely suffers because it's obvious, like, this isn't their, what they're used to. This isn't their, like, field of experience. So they're doing, like, their best at it. I'm not saying that I could have done better. But it's just obvious that, like, this isn't someone that's well versed in directing like well choreographed fight scenes, where when you watch something by someone is it's just obvious. Yeah,
and you make a good point about the indie movies, because I think too you can tell that this movie tried to do some more experimental things.
Oh yeah.
For instance, like the title credit sequence I thought was really interesting. I wouldn't say I necessarily liked it, but
it was a choice.
I appreciated it, you know, and I thought that some of the shots they were trying to do or the sequences, you could tell that they were trying to be more creative, but I don't think that worked in the fight sequences, because I think you could tell they were like, oh, let's do it this way, or let's do these quick, you know, cuts back and forth and do this cool swing around and make it go in really fast and do close-ups, and it'll be like really quick and fun and cool and aesthetic at the same time. And it's like, I get that, but also it is a Marvel movie. And as aesthetic as you want to be, there's still a certain point where it's like you are shooting a blockbuster action film. And it would be nice to be able to follow the action, I guess.
Yeah.
I noticed it a lot, not to spoil there is a sequence that's kind of like a car chase. Which again, I feel like happens in every single Marvel movie.
Right, yeah.
And I felt like the way that, like, they were trying to take shots of, like, the cars and, like, the cars flipping and the way the cars were moving in and out of other cars in the road, I could tell then that it was affecting that sequence, I guess. Because I was like, why are you shooting this car going off at this angle when it's like you could just have a wide drone shot of the cars driving through? Like, it just felt very, I don't know. It was just hard for me to follow.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And that one in particular, that scene is interesting because I do remember that scene. Like, if I think through all the action scenes, I can remember them all. But that was one that did stick out. But I think because that one did have some pretty decent character moments in that action scene.
Yeah.
And so again, I think that's where the movie shines, and it will be interesting to see in Eternals how Chloe Zhao kind of adjusts to that, because I think that will be another kind of test of this strategy that Marvel is taking with their director choices.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think about the like casting and kind of performances?
Yeah, I think they were good. I think that like the core four, so there was Scarlett Johansson was obviously Black Widow. There was Florence Pugh as her sister, starts with a Y, don't remember the name.
But Yelena, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Then you had David Harbour and Rachel Weisz as the quote unquote parents. I'm not spoiling anything that's not in the trailers. That's what I'm gonna go with. And I think they were, I mean, obviously they're all terrific actors, and having like them, those four actors like in a room together in a Marvel movie, I think is wild. Because not that Marvel hasn't had like good actors before, like I think they've always have at least good actors, but I think least in the case of Florence Pugh and Rachel Weisz, those are like great actors. And I think, like, especially with Florence Pugh, like, I think that she had a couple of the most, like, emotional, or made me feel the most emotional moments, like, in an MCU movie. And I think that is, like, it shows the difference between when you have good actors and great actors, just because it's just so much more impactful in those more character-based moments. So I did like the performances.
What,
I
you don't think Jeremy Renner is a great actor in his emotional moments in Endgame?
You know, I couldn't do it, so I can't be too hard on him. But I feel like there was an aspect where, and we'll get into this in spoilers, but there was like a moment, like basically when the third act hits, I feel like they kind of start just wasted a lot of the potential of the performances, at least. Like it felt like they kind of just were like, okay, we had our emotional moments, and now it's going to be time for some action, baby.
Yeah, it almost felt like to me, like WandaVision. This is something we talked about in the WandaVision episode, is that the first four or five episodes, like really gave you a look at the characters and how they interacted with each other, and showcase a lot of great emotional beats and really good, like, scene work. And then in the final episode, when it tonally shifts to action sequences, like Marvel action sequences, it really lost a lot of what it had going for it. And I think that this movie fell prey to the same thing. And I just don't know that they've learned how to balance tone yet. How to go from, because like Endgame has a lot of emotion in it, but there's emotion throughout the whole thing, like, and action throughout the whole thing, whereas this goes emotion, massive action sequence,
right? Yeah.
And I think the same thing happened with WandaVision, and they're just, they don't know how to make that shift in a way that balances the film or the story yet, I guess, is kind of what my problem was.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I feel like a lot of the Phase 3 movies, especially later Phase 3 movies, did figure that out. There was obviously exceptions, like I think Ant-Man and the Wasp, and I haven't seen Captain Marvel in a while, but I feel like that was kind of in that same thing where it just didn't feel as like of a complete of a vision. And so this felt more like that, where I really liked the first two acts, but then the third act, while it did have cool moments, it just didn't feel as connected to the rest of the movie.
Yeah, which feels like the general sentiment from a lot of people.
Yeah, like I think what I've been hearing is not really anything negative, just more pretty middling reviews all around, which is better than some Marvel movies have gotten, so...
Yeah, I would say this is a very, like, mid-tier Marvel movie for me.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, that's non-spoiler. Like, it's campy, it's fun. I felt like it had a lot of similar humor moments to something like a Thor movie. Like, just kind of super goofy, campy humor. Maybe also similar to, like, Ant-Man, though I'm not sure if I like... It's been a while since I've seen Ant-Man, so I can't say if I like Ant-Man better or not. But just like, you know, it had a lot of charm to it, but I think in a lot of the bigger aspects of it, it faltered a lot. So that's what kind of made it more, it just wasn't as interesting. So I think that's why for me it was more, it's a mid-tier. Like, it's not some of my least favorite Marvel movies. It's not as bad as Ant-Man and the Wasp, but...
Right, yeah, I think it definitely has its moments. I think it's very well paced. Even if the third act kind of feels a little separate, I think, like, I wasn't really out of it for much of the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
I was pretty invested. I thought that the humor, while still, like, Marvel humor, worked fine. I thought it was funny. I thought Florence Pugh was very funny. I mean, we saw her be funny in Little Women, so it wasn't, like, super surprising.
She was very funny. David Harbour was also very funny.
Right. And, like, he had a kind of a different style of humor than we've seen in some Marvel movies, where his was a lot more like physical comedy, and I feel like Marvel hasn't had that kind of physical comedy except for like Hulk, like yeah. throwing things or like accidentally punching someone too hard. I don't know. It was just a lot. It was very different, and I liked that a lot. A lot of basically his whole character, I thought, was something that we haven't really seen as much in Marvel. So
yeah,
I liked him a lot. It was funny because like, didn't Stranger Things 3 end with his character being like at a Russian like prison?
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, we could just cut it right here and we're back.
Yeah. I mean, really? Yeah. Sure.
So yeah, I think it was, I mean, kind of getting into our like final non-spoiler thoughts, I thought it was good but not great. I put it like, I gave it 7 out of 10, but I mean, it's been so long since I've seen some Marvel movies, but in my rankings I put it like my last 7 out of 10. And so I say for me, it like borders right on that 3 to 3.5 out of 5 star range.
Yeah, I don't have a full comprehensive ranking, but mm-hmm. I have it below like Thor Ragnarok right now and above Iron Man 3. But like that's out of like 12 movies.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
so because I've been like re-ranking them as I've gone through them.
Gotcha. I need to do that soon. Well, not soon because I really don't want to have to rewatch all these in a short amount of time, but like
in
as I rewatch them,
maybe in 2022.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that's basically all I have about, because I feel like there's so much we can't spoil, and I really don't want to spoil too much. So why don't we go to an ad break, and then when we come back, we will get into all of the fun spoilers. What should we talk about first? We could quickly just talk about that opening credit sequence, like you said.
And the intro with kids.
Yeah, I thought the intro was very good. It was funny because like I knew that she was like taken as a kid to be like a Russian spy, but at first in that intro I was like, so was she actually a kid though? Because I thought she was younger, but then she was. But it was just interesting. I thought it was a good way to open it because it grounded it a little bit more, obviously. And then they had the opening credit scene, which I loved the visuals. The song choice definitely will not be getting our Best Needle Drop Award. But
yeah, very, yeah. That was, yeah. The song choice was definitely not a winner. I really liked the idea of doing a title sequence like this.
No, yeah, for sure.
It felt very Fincher. yeah. Uh-huh. It felt like they were really trying to be creative. I didn't really understand all of the stuff they showed. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, like, some, I don't know, Marvel YouTube account will have, like, broken down every single thing by now, and I could watch that if I wanted to. I thought the intro with them as kids, it was a little longer than I was expecting, which was interesting, because mm-hmm. They did focus on those kids for a good, like, 10 or 15 minutes, I feel like, maybe even a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a good opening to the movie. It established a lot of the familial roles between the characters and kind of seeing what was going on. And then got into the story. So I thought that was an interesting and unique opening that we haven't really seen in Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked that they did that. I liked that they took a step to do something different.
I agree. I honestly could have watched a whole movie of just whatever that was happening in that opening credits thing. That seemed very interesting. I would have watched that. But we get through the movie to the third act. And then the third act is kind of like its own little movie, which is it's just interesting because I felt like, kind of like what you were saying in the beginning, it just cuts, like, it's almost like you can see it, like, you have the emotional moment with the American Pie thing, which obviously was like they're winking hard at you in the beginning, like, this is gonna come back later, and mm-hmm. they do that emotional moment, and then the light cuts in and they find them in the house, and it's like, all right, now it's action time. Like, that's what I felt like they were saying, like, none of this emotion, time for fun.
My dad like jumped out of his pants.
No, there was a couple jump scares. Like, I don't know if they're supposed to be jump scares, but there was that one, and I think there was another one. Yeah, that was funny. And then we have the third act, which is like, it's interesting. It's an interesting idea. I think like the whole idea of her going back to like liberate like the people that like she was raised with and now are still mind controlled is interesting. I think it's funny because it feels like the stakes are technically so high because it's like this guy, it's like, I mean, in the beginning they show all of these world leaders and how like this army can like change wars and basically take over the world. But the whole time it feels very low stakes, maybe because like we know that she's not dead at the end, so we basically know she's gonna be fine. I don't know. So the whole third act just felt very weird to me.
I totally agree. I also feel like it, I mean, I don't know how much we want to get into this, but it felt like they were trying very, very hard to be like leaning into a hot button topics of like trafficking.
No, yeah, for sure.
And manipulation, which I think is fine, and mm-hmm. those are good things to address, and it felt like they were trying too hard.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because they've talked, I think they've been doing a lot of, I think, interviews, and they've basically said nothing about that. They've only made, at least Scarlett Johansson's only made, like, the Me Too movement comparisons, which they were kind of talking about even before this movie came out. Like, they were saying, like, this is the direction we're going to go with. Which is interesting. Like, I got that. And, I mean, besides the fact that, like, she supports Woody Allen and other...
Joss Whedon now, apparently, and Roman things. Polanski. Like,
yeah.
It's a little hard. It's not super believable when she's like, oh, you're a white man taking advantage of girls. How bad of you. I'm going to kill you. And then it's like, you see her in real life, and it's like,
And she's like, I would work with Woody Allen anytime.
Like, he's right. My friend.
Like, he's literally
Joss
the
Whedon
guy.
Joss Whedon is amazing. Joss Whedon is fantastic.
That you just killed in the movie. Yeah, so that was weird. And then I also felt like the theme was very naive, just going into, like, once they freed them, they're like, you're free to make your own choices now. I'm like, what are they going to do? They have nowhere to go. Like, it felt just very naive. Like, oh, once
yeah.
you're free, you can just, you're free, you know, you can do what
well,
you want.
Well, I even thought that right after, like, obviously Florence Pugh's character had a line where she talked about being released from this and buying this vest, basically. Mm-hmm. And feeling like that was a choice. She was finally able to do something for herself. It came across as weird because it almost felt like they were making the girls feel dumb. Where they're clearly, like, tested for their intelligence
right.
and capacity to, like, retain information and be trained and stuff. But it fell off tonally in that kind of where they're just all just standing there and
right.
staring
well,
at
well,
them.
And
like,
that's
it
what
just
I,
was a little weird to
that's
me.
What I felt like. It was like the message felt like they believed, like, well, once you're free, you know, then you can do what you want. And, like, people don't have not everyone has the resources to do what they want. They don't have, like, the network,
the
like in real
family,
life, I mean, yeah,
like
it's like that. It just felt like a very naive, like, centrist kind of thing. Like,
and also, yeah. like, I was a little bit confused by this concept in general because when it showed all the stuff on the screen, it essentially seems like he is a network of, like, thousands of Black Widows.
Mm-hmm.
And then they release, like, what, 15? 20?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it just felt like they were building this big climax, and then it's, like, showing all these girls, and they're taking all these girls, and then it's, like, oh, okay, we released 15, but, like, what about all these other kids? Like, it just was very, the whole concept of all that
yeah.
was very confusing to me. I didn't really understand kind of the Black Widow program and what he was doing. Like, he felt just very lame.
I feel like they, I feel like they did say, like, oh, well, now we'll go and set the other ones free. But that was a very offhand comment. And it was like, and it was just had me thinking, like, do they have other, like, secondhand guys that are, like, his right-hand men that are also running other locations? Like, where is everyone else? Where are they staying?
Yeah.
And also, you, the, because he wears, like, this cologne, or it's not cologne, but I was,
it's
just
his,
like,
it's his body smell.
Yeah, his body smell. And like, does it, does he naturally admit that, emit that, or does he like,
I think so.
Okay.
I
well,
think
that's
he naturally
weird.
Emits it.
Because I was like, if it's something they can put on, the natural idea would be, why don't we just not waste our time training the Black Widows, and we'll just spray them with this spray, and no one will want to kill them. And we can take, but like, I don't know. So why does he naturally admit it? Is he just like,
it's like he did it. It's his specific smell he used.
Oh, he put it in their programming?
No, in their programming.
But she's not programmed.
I don't know.
It was very confusing. That whole thing, it was cool because it's like, oh, she can't shoot the gun. She can't hurt him. So now she has to break her nose. But it leaves a lot of plot holes because I was like, how does this work? Why doesn't he give this to other people so they can just take over and not have to fight people?
Yeah,
I don't
it's
know.
Very, 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 very strange.
Yeah, yeah.
He also just felt so like, I mean, there have been some lame villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but like all the stuff with his daughter felt like it could have, like, it was borderline evil because like he rescued his daughter and basically like turned her into a robot, and that is very evil, but it didn't, they didn't make it seem evil. Like,
yeah,
he kind of was just like,
the thing was interesting.
He was like, this is my daughter, blah blah blah, thank you for helping me create her, blah blah blah. And it was like, like, I just wish that it would have been played up more to be like, like, he actually seemed more of a threat.
Right,
like, he
and I think
just
they
seemed
underutilized
like a bimbo.
Her a bit, because, like, I thought it was a good idea to the whole time they were building up, like, oh, she killed this girl, and then, but now she's back, and it's like, she has to face the consequences. But then, she just doesn't face the consequences, and she just is like, gives her the little red stuff, and she's like, yeah, you're fine now, I forgive you. I don't know, that's what it felt like to me. Like, I really did like the first two acts, and I do like aspects of the third act, but it felt like the third act really like underutilized what they had available to them, and it didn't really fully capitalize on the potential of the story and the first two acts. Like, I think this really could have been like an easy 4 out of 5, like, pretty decent Marvel movie. But it felt like they just missed the mark on a few things that were like,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Now, was, I'm trying to think, the Dracoff thing, like them originally killing Dracoff and then, her accidentally killing, the daughter. Was that the specific Budapest mission that, like, Clint and Natasha always reference in the previous movies? Like,
maybe?
Oh, what happened in Budapest? Because you know what I'm talking about?
I guess that she says, yeah.
It's been a long time since I've watched some of those movies.
I don't even remember that.
But, like, it's throughout multiple Avengers and Marvel movies between Barton and Natasha, that
it
something
be,
happened
then.
In Budapest.
It must be. That
and
makes sense,
I always am like, oh, it's a mystery. It's this thing. And then they, like, reveal it. And it's, like, really kind of, I don't know,
lame.
Not super exciting.
Right. Yeah. It's
so
interesting.
So I'm like, is that what has always been referenced before? Or, like, I just thought that was kind of interesting that they brought it up in this movie. But, like, Barton wasn't even in this movie. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, going to the post-credit scene, it looks like he might be in something coming up. I mean, I know they're doing the Hawkeye show, so I'm
I
assuming
think
that's
this leads into the Hawkeye show.
right. Yeah, and then it was interesting in the post-credit scene because that was like it had the girl from Falcon Winter Soldier in there, and I was like, okay, so that is one thing that
Which,
actually connects.
yeah, which to me, okay, I have a few thoughts about this that I thought in the theater and then after. So, first of all, I knew she was gonna get a dog, and because they made that lead in where she's like, I'd like a dog, and then Florence Pugh has the dog. One of my
Love
pet
it.
peeves about movies with dogs is when they show the dog and then the dog just like runs off, and it's like, where did the dog go? So that happened in this, and I was like, where is the dog? Like, it just ran off into the graveyard.
Never
Like, why
know.
isn't it sitting by you? I don't know. Second is that I know post-credits scenes are usually like Easter eggs or things that like are from the comics that lead into something else or like a reveal of a villain or whatever. I felt like this one, they've said basically like to not pigeonhole people, but like, oh, you don't have to watch the Disney Plus shows to understand the Marvel Universe,
No, you
the
have to.
movies.
You have to.
They've said that, but it's like that is very
Have they said
clear that
that?
that they have. That was
Ah, I thought
originally
they
talked
didn't say
about.
that.
Like,
Interesting.
yeah, that it was like you don't have to watch all the shows to be able to like stay in
That's
tune with the
def
Marvel
that's
Universe.
that's definitely not
And
it
it's
anymore.
like,
Yeah.
so now at this point, to extend sort of gatekeeping, it's like someone can't just go watch this movie and be like, who is that lady? I don't have any idea what's going on. Like, you have to watch the show to really or Falcon and Winter Soldier to really understand kind of who this lady is and how is Florence Pugh tied up in all this. And so that was kind of interesting to me because it felt like almost an advertisement to be like, hey, find out what's going on Disney
And
Plus. Like,
Hawkeye
I'm
coming
surprised they
later this
didn't show
year,
a Disney
baby.
Plus,
Like,
like,
Hawkeye will
a logo or
return in
something
Hawkeye.
on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, because it was like you have to watch the show to understand who she is. And then, even further, you have to watch the next show to understand what the post-credit scene actually means.
Yeah,
Like,
and then
very
I like
connected.
was wondering like what is the timeline of that? Like how long after? 'Cause clearly she knows this lady already and like how obviously it's after Endgame, so like because Natasha was
Right.
dead. And then it's like when you were writing this movie, was this the original post-credit sequence? Was this
No, it
added?
wasn't. They shot that last year, I think. Even winter, maybe. Yeah, it was
Yeah,
very
so like
recently.
what was supposed to be there? You know what I mean? Like
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
what was supposed to be there if this is a push for Disney Plus in the new phase? Like, was there something else that was gonna be there? Was it just gonna be Florence and the dog? And then like this they added what's her face?
Maybe.
I don't
Yeah,
know. Those
it's
are just
very
some of my
interesting.
sporadic thoughts about that. What did you think about the
No,
post-credits
that's
scene?
basically what I thought. Like, I mean, and I thought it was kind of. I always think the second post credit. I mean, there wasn't a first really, but the second was always kind of like more of a teaser. So I was like, okay, I get it. It's gonna be happening in Hawkeye. That's what is gonna happen. So that's good because I really had no idea what was gonna happen in that. Didn't know if I'd be interested, but if Florence Pugh's gonna be in it, then I will be interested. But it is interesting this whole movie for the future of Marvel because it's happened they did it a little in Ant-Man and the Wasp, but it's really this is like the first movie this and Loki where it's like they don't really give you much of a basis of where it's taking place. You it's like takes place between certain movies that have already come out, and so you have to know the exact timeline. Like in Loki, where it's like, okay, so this is taking place right at the end of Avengers 1, and so that means this hasn't happened yet, and so that's why this is happening. So, like, I'm watching Loki with my mom, and she's seen them like once, but she doesn't really know when Avengers takes place or like what comes after Avengers. So I have to kind of contextualize it, like, no, this is 2012, and so this hasn't happened yet. And same thing with this, where it's like, okay, so this is after Civil War. So she hasn't, they haven't made up as Avengers yet. They're still in the limbo. And
The
even further,
Sokovia Accords are still
still a thing.
being taken into effect.
Exactly. And it's like a that combined with the TV show is really like turning this even more into like a TV show. Like just even like a big TV show, I guess, because it's like taking this huge timeline and like it's now being like, okay, we can take the timeline and put stuff in between movies. Like, okay, we know there's these movies. And so it's cool in one way because it's like the even further the first time this has ever been done, where it's not only like they're making 20 movies and they keep advancing the story. Now it's like they can make movies and it can go back and recontextualize other things that already happened for us. And so
Yeah.
it feels like this bigger thing, but it's also, like you said, even further like kind of gatekeepy because it's like you really can't fully enjoy Black Widow unless you've seen pretty much all the Marvel movies, and then you know them well enough to be able to place this one in between two specific Marvel movies.
Yeah, at least to fully understand, 'cause like my dad watched it and he has seen the Marvel movies, but I would guarantee that like he can't remember all those details about what movie is what, and you know, he really enjoyed this movie and thought it was fun. But like I'm sure if I were to ask him like, "Oh, did you understand this? Did you understand this?" he would not, because it's like just one of those things that even I felt like, and I watched Civil War like I don't know, maybe a couple months ago. And I even was like, okay, trying to mentally track with some of the things that have happened. Because it's really hard after the fact to be like, okay, Infinity War and separate them in my brain and, you know, Endgame. And then you already have new shows that are like post Endgame. So it's very hard. It was difficult to place it mentally. I think if I didn't know going in when it was set, I would have been like very confused.
No, yeah, for sure. And maybe people don't really think about that like in the way we are. Maybe they really just are like, well, if I don't understand everything, as long as I can just like see the action, have a few laughs, you know, which is fine. But it is interesting because it's never really happened before. I mean, they did experiment with it a little in Star Wars with Rogue One and Solo, which I remember there was tons of people confused about that. Like, where does this take place? So before New Hope. But even that was not at the level of this, where it's Civil War and then Infinity War, basically the two that you have to kind of put it between.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe for some it's good because my mom didn't remember Black Widow died, and I'm sure the stakes were probably higher if you don't remember that she died. Because, yeah, because that kind of is
Interesting.
funny. But,
Yeah.
yeah. So, final thoughts for me. I liked it. I would recommend it if you're obviously a Marvel fan, you've probably already seen it. But even like if you're wanting a fun time at the movies, like I feel like, I mean, Quiet Place Part 2 was pretty good, and then Fast and Furious 9, I mean, I feel like doesn't have maybe as wide of a field. Maybe I'm just out of the loop, but this is like the first like big blockbuster movie that's come out post pandemic, or we say post pandemic, but really just post theaters opening again. And yeah, if you're just wanting like looking for an excuse like to go back to the movies, this would be a good one to go back to because
Yeah,
especially
it's fun.
it's yeah, there's gonna be people there, so you can have a nice experience.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought this movie, you know, I have notoriously said that I don't care about this movie for a while. I was not necessarily looking forward to it in the way I have other Marvel movies. I was looking forward to it in the sense that I was like, this will be a fun movie experience, and it was. So I was a little surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did. Like, I
Yeah,
gave
it's
it 3.5
fun.
stars. If I were to watch it again and break up points, you know, in the plot, it probably would be
Right.
like a 3-star movie. I don't know, but
But Florence Pugh is just so good.
she
She is
is.
so good at this
But
movie.
really, yeah, it was the characters that sold it for me. Honestly, I think that Natasha was the weakest character in this movie.
But and she was still the best that she's ever been in the Marvel movies, so it's funny.
I still don't think Scarlett Johansson was ever the right casting for her.
No, they should have done Emily Blunt. That was gonna be it would have been so much better.
Gosh, I love her.
It would have been great. That was with who they were gonna cast. They were gonna cast her.
Interesting. Yeah. Hmm. I thought Florence Pugh was great. I think they didn't use Rachel Weisz enough. I think they could have utilized her more. I thought David Harbour was great. I think him and Florence Pugh and their relationship was kind of my favorite aspect of the movie in general. I think Florence Pugh really elevated all the scenes with Scarlett Johansson. Just their relationship was very well characterized by her acting. I think it's dumb that people are sharing that final scene clip around where Scarlett is like, no, don't. And then she's like, I have to do this. And then hits the thing into the engine and then explodes back. Have you seen that on Twitter today?
No.
You know what scene I'm talking about,
though? Yeah, I know what scene, yeah.
So a lot of people have been posting this specific scene. And being like, oh my gosh, this is awful, this is terrible, comparing Florence Pugh to Gal Gadot, which is just so ridiculous in my head.
No.
Because, like, Gal Gadot is a terrible actor and a terrible person.
Yeah, and a double whammy.
Florence
for
Pugh
her.
Is a great actor, and I think it's so dumb to take a 15-minute clip in arguably one of the worst parts of the movie, and also, like, you can't really judge someone's acting by, like, no, don't do it.
Also,
I have to do it. Explosion. Like, that proves absolutely nothing. And I just, like, if people watch that sequence and they're like, oh, yeah, Marvel is so stupid, I think you're really missing out. Because I'm one of those people that is very, like, I really enjoy Marvel. And I'm also on the side that's, like, I do think Marvel has taken over the way cinema is viewed. I believe that it has made it a lot harder for indie movies, blah, 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 all that Martin Scorsese shit about Marvel movies.
Scorsese core.
But I'm also on the side that's like, I do really enjoy Marvel movies, and I think that they can be a really fun time. And I think when you take a clip like that, specifically from this movie, you're really just like, adding to discourse, but you're also just like missing out on something that could be really fun and is campy. And that's pretty much my whole perspective of the movie. Is like, I'm someone who didn't care about this movie, but like, I still really enjoyed seeing it, and I thought it was good and fun. And I think it's stupid that people are like
sharing that,
and in general, just
so
like,
annoying.
I don't know.
I hate when people share out of like, they did that with Marriage Story, and that was annoying. Because that's the thing with that. It's like, you don't, I mean, I didn't notice that scene when I was watching the movie, and that's, you don't, if a movie is edited well, you're not going to notice stuff like that, because it should fit in the context of the story. And so if you watch it out of context, you're like, wow, she's being really dramatic. But then you watch it in context, and it's like, oh, I mean, I didn't bat an eye.
And I do think, like, you know, that scene is cheesy.
I mean, the whole sequence is cheesy. Yeah, for
sure. But it's like, I don't know. That's just what it is. And it's like, it's, I would say it's more campy than cheesy.
It's also really hard to act. Like, even the Kal-El No thing, which I'll share how many times I want, is like, it's very hard to act in these movies in those kind of big emotional scenes, because they give you the context of the scene, but you have like, you're basically alone on a green screen. You're like, probably didn't have that thing in her hand, and she wasn't stabbing it into anything, so she's just kind of moving her arms. And they can change those scenes to however they want. They can contextualize them in a completely different way.
Yeah, like a lot of times it's not even the actor's fault. Like, when you're just giving them a line that's like, no,
now
don't
stab the air,
it's like,
by yourself.
It's like, of course it's gonna, like, I don't know. It just is like really ridiculous to me. But like, I agree. Right. Like, I think, you know, watching this scene, I'm like, oh, it is kind of silly the way they're acting, and like, it's funny and over the top. But in context, it works.
Yeah, you're like, they're falling through the sky and they're about to die, so I can buy it if I need to.
I don't know. That's just my little side rant, I guess, about it. I think that is something that we'll see and maybe can talk about as well going forward as stuff releases simultaneously on streaming and in the theaters is people can take these moments away. And one thing I saw Houston Post, who we just had on our Star Wars episode that I thought was really interesting that I didn't think about before, was something about like goofy compilations, like someone posting a funny moments compilation because they have the clips from the streaming and people might not watch the full movie, but their context of the movie would be watching like a compilation on YouTube. And I thought that was really interesting because that's something that maybe we see usually months down the line.
After and a lot of people have seen it already.
After a lot of people have seen the movie. And so I thought that was something, because that's not something I've thought about at all going into a streaming release.
Because there's nothing like that, like funniest moments of The Irishman 2019, like they don't really do that.
It'll be really interesting to see, you know, even kind of the aftermath of this movie in the next couple weeks of kind of how that worked out, what's going on, and then going into some other bigger blockbusters that could have the same things happen, I guess.
Yeah, funniest moments of Jungle Cruise. All right, we did it. We reviewed a Marvel movie, and we will be doing that three more times in the future year.
More than three.
Well, four. Next week we'll be doing Loki series with returning guest Peter Kohanek, who he was in the Hallmark episode, and then he was also in the WandaVision episode. So now he's coming back for another Marvel show review. I'm very excited for this one because, spoilers, I mean, so far, obviously it's not done yet by the time I'm recording this, but I do really like Loki. So I'm very excited to review that. All right, so we've got a few things to plug before we get out of here. First, if you have thoughts on Black Widow, you can email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com, and maybe we'll read your comments in the next episode. You can also find us on all social platforms. Just search Secondhand Film Critics, and you should find us there.
Mm-hmm.
What else can they do? Can they do anything else or just leave?
Yeah, you can rate us on podcast.
Yeah, follow
us. Give us a five-star review.
Please.
Don't hate me for not liking Natasha Romanoff.
Hey, if you leave a review, maybe we'll read that one in the next episode, you know?
Wow.
Look at that.
Five stars for Florence Pugh.
Five stars for Florence Pugh. That you make that the review. Just write five stars for Florence Pugh, and that's the only review. All right. Anything else?
No. Thanks for listening and tuning in.
Yeah. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla. And we're your secondhand film.